And now, Icon Art Radio.
Hi, it's Bill Teeple with Alan Cobb and Donna Colby, and it's Icon Art Radio. Before we get started on today's topic, Alan is going to make a bit of a correction to something that was said in his last show.
Yeah, I had been talking about innovative musical instruments, and I think I made reference to Harry Partch and some of his extraordinary musical instruments. And not to take any of the glory away from Partch, but I mentioned an instrument made of rotating bowls that you played by wetting your fingers and touching the edges of the bowls, like running your finger around a wine glass to make it sing. It turns out that this instrument far predates Partch. It was invented by Benjamin Franklin, and it's called an armonica, sort of a harmonica without the H. And Franklin played the violin and the Welsh harp and the guitar, and he invented a number of variations on conventional musical instruments, and he invented this harmonica, which was a box with a set of nested bowls of crystal that rotated in a little bit of water, and you touched them with your fingertips and they sang and made very ethereal noises. In fact, I just have to read one note here. There are a number of falsehoods circulating about the glass harmonica. Some encyclopedias state that the bowls turn in a trough of water. In fact, as I just did, this is not true, because immersing the bowls in water would change their pitch, so you have to just wet your fingers. And interestingly enough, some books state that playing the glass harmonica and tuned wine glasses results in severe nervous disorders. A German glass harmonica instruction manual from the 1700s, based on Benjamin Franklin's design, categorically states that the sound of these instruments will not bring the dead back to life. And just one closing note, Marie Antoinette had one of Ben Franklin's harmonicas, and Mozart and some other famous composers of the time actually composed pieces for the glass harmonica. So now to today's topic.
So we'll segue from that by asking the question, how did Benjamin Franklin first think of the idea to do this? What made him want to create
something? Benjamin Franklin's a great example to get this whole thing launched.
Greater inventor. Our topic today is beginning and ending a work of art. You know, what happens at these moments? And I was thinking of this being a good time of year for a topic like that, because we're about to end an old year, begin a new year, which is really just an arbitrary point in time. And the month January is named after the Roman god Janus, who looks backward and forward simultaneously, which brought to my mind the question of, is there such a thing as a beginning anyway, or is it all just a middle or a transition? What makes a point be a beginning or an ending? So this is the question I'm throwing out to both of you and to all of us today to talk about in creating a work of art.
Well, I like the middle way. I always have liked the middle way.
Yeah.
My friends know that. This thing of beginning, I watch this all the time, because I teach art. And people come in wanting to learn how to make art and what it is to make a painting, and then they have to sit down and this is a difficult point for me as a teacher, because once they get, and I try to address this point from the day one, but there's always the point when they're through with the exercises where you sort of lay out the fundamentals, and then it's getting down to business, which is making a painting, you know. And so they have to sit in front of the blank canvas and begin. Mm-hmm. Well, if that's where they're at, then they're in trouble. So I have to help them through this issue.
Yeah.
Because you can't begin to begin. Mm-hmm. What you have is a desire. And then you're going to start trying to fulfill your desire without having to think about it, without having to begin, because life just moves based on desire. Mm-hmm. So we're just all moving, and we're drawn ahead by what's in front of our faces, and we just spontaneously start to do something in response to what's in front of our faces. And then we've begun, and then we're in the middle of it.
And they already began when they chose to even take the class in well, the beginning. So the, what if something motivated them to want to be a painter? Even?
Right. So it's a matter of getting out of the way and stop thinking about, now I'm going to begin, because you're already in mid-process. Mm-hmm. So it's a matter of what is it that you're, you can't begin to paint a painting. You can begin to paint your experience. And that's what it's all about. You've got some kind of experience you want to convey. Now, you can just start opening your mouth and talking about it, and you're doing it. Mm-hmm. Or if it's more of a visual thing, then you have to learn some skills of visual expression, just like any language that you learn, and then you talk about it visually. But without an experience that you want to talk about, then you can't just paint a painting. But that this is where people get hung up. They're sitting there and, what'll I paint, Bill? I don't know what to paint. Yeah. And I have to get them to start to address, what they want to say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I used to, on a Sunday afternoon, everyone's reading the New York Times, and I'm sitting there at the age of 7 or 6 or something, thinking, boy, this is bad. Everybody's just sitting there reading the paper. And, and I'd say, what shall I do? And someone would say, oh, why don't you draw something? And I'd think, yes, I like drawing. So I'd grab a pencil and a piece of paper, and then I had to deal with, what shall I draw? And I didn't like that. I liked drawing. I wanted to already be drawing. And as soon as I started thinking about drawing what, I was losing the process and getting into this sort of other area that was kind of by definition outside of time. It was like a theoretical thing. And I didn't want theory. I wanted action. I wanted to be doing something, like, for example, drawing or making something. And even now, I love to make things. I'm always making something. And if I sit still for a fairly short period of time and think about what I should make, I come up with nothing. But if I sit still for a very short period of time and just, relax, within moments, something will pop. I've got to finish building that octagon speaker configuration I was working on last week. So it's almost as though the question, what shall I do, defeats its own purpose right out of the box.
However, my experience is completely the opposite of that. I could sit for hours thinking up ideas of what to do and what to make. I love doing it more than anything else. And one time went up to Iowa City to hear Thomas Moore give a lecture, the guy who wrote Care of the Soul and all those books. And he was talking about the creative process, and I can't remember what the exact topic was that day, but I raised my hand and I said, I am very infatuated with the energy of beginnings. I love having an idea, and I love facing a blank page or blank canvas, and I don't have any blocks about beginning a creative project. But as soon as I get around to the middle of it, the energy fizzles, and I have difficulty sustaining the energy to finish the piece. Mm-hmm. So my question to him was, how can I keep that same high energy I have at the beginning through till the end? And his answer was, spend more time with beginnings. Mm-hmm. And he didn't go further than that. He said, yeah, just think about that when through the course of the next months or weeks or months, and see what that reveals to you. And so I did that, and I realized that there was some little psychological thing to me about conception, about mm-hmm. the creative energy, the fountainhead that would come up when the idea sprang up. And then once I got to a certain point, it was like this commitment thing, like a duty.
Yeah, you're operating on memory instead of on a beginning.
And I, but So I just kind of broke the project into littler pieces,
right,
so that every time I sat down, resumed the same work, it was a new beginning.
Right.
It was completely a fresh approach, and
right,
it worked. It was like a very slight difference in the way I thought about it, but mm-hmm, somehow that worked for me.
I guess I see quite a difference between sitting down and thinking up things to do and sitting down and deciding what I'm going to do now. Because that's what was stopping me. I spend lots of time thinking up things to do and writing volumes of notes and things about what I might do sometime. But it's just that sort of stark moment of the blank page, where you've created an obligation for yourself. Instead of looking at what you want, you've looked at what you should do. And that just takes all the fun out of it, and for at least for some of us who are, you know, irresponsible or something. But I love to do things on my own, and I don't much like to do them if someone tells me to do them.
But I think your thing was a similar thing in that you got yourself obligated to this canvas,
right,
or something, mm-hmm, and the whole creative process, which is always beginning, always new, always mm-hmm, fresh, always just moving spontaneously towards its goal, gets stuck, and then it's a matter of ending it. I mean, you know, instead of it being an all the time ongoing process,
mm-hmm,
the way I deal with this with students is I have them address the process by having a journal. So all this whole flood of beginnings, which is really what we're talking about, of ideas, new ideas, new ideas, new ideas, things we love, things we want to do, things, you know, you just see that that's always going on for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that, well, so what I'd have them do is I would just jot this down, get it down, thumbnail, few lines, anything, so that you've got your flow in this book.
Yeah.
So that at any moment in your process of creating paintings and you've got a blank page in front of you or something like that, you can open up your book and you're reminded. So it's sort of a reminding of who I am, because somehow we get off away from ourselves and away from the free flow,
yeah,
and into this sort of like contrived sort of,
yeah,
situation. That's where the creativity goes in. Everyone who is successful at the process of manifesting art is able to keep that flow, that dynamic flow, and love of every part going in the context of some kind of presentation or manifested physical, mm-hmm, expression. Otherwise, what happens is it all bogs down, mm-hmm, and it never gets...
Mm-hmm.
It just gets still. I mean, it's usually a stilted thing. We see this with great artists too. Their original study or their original sketch has the feeling, the spontaneity, the dynamism, the life in it, and yet their final masterpiece that they spent, you know, 1,000 hours on from the study is very accomplished. Mm-hmm. Which is the other show we want to do on virtuosity.
Yeah.
I mean, getting stuck in virtuosity. It's very virtuosic, and yet there's no this experience, this original experience that we're so excited to talk about is not there.
Yeah.
See, sometimes I think that's the problem that happens in the middle. If a piece is going well, you kind of get this like clutch that, oh, I don't want to wreck it. I'm afraid I'm going to wreck it. And one of the therapeutic methods I have to dealing with that problem is to watch the DVD, The Magic of Picasso, that was, I think it was made in the 1950s or something. Mm-hmm. It's a fabulous film. And you watch him do this like amazing drawing and then like keep going and keep going and keep going and just changing things and adding things and not liking this, completely painting it out. And there's one that where he spent like 5 hours or something doing this. I mean, it doesn't show you the whole 5 hours. It's just kind of like stop motion. And in the end, he says, that didn't work, but now I know where I wanted to go from the beginning. And he completely starts over again, and you watch him do the second version.
Yeah.
And So it's a wonderful insight into this exact process we've been talking about, the daring to change what you've, to have a new conception at every moment, even if you technically wreck what you started.
Yeah. Well, I think what it shows is that, the artist is generally seeking to preserve spontaneity. And we play games with ourselves to try and prevent those habits of responsibility and intellectualizing from overshadowing the spontaneity. If you're living in the present and then you're painting, that's fine. But then you start thinking about what you should be painting and what you just did paint and whether what you're about to paint fits into some kind of theory about painting. And all of a sudden, you're not there anymore. Painting isn't what you're doing, and it's just kind of a distraction from this, mental gyration that you've decided to ride for a while instead. And I guess it's the same, in a sense, the same kind of obstacle to knowing when to stop. Hmm. Do you stop because it's gone too far and it's ruined, or do you stop because you have some kind of sixth sense that says it can't get any better? Or do you stop because you actually knew where you were going and you got there? Maybe it's a little of each, and it depends on the artist and the work.
How do you deal with that with your students? How do you teach your students?
Well, that's one of the most the student himself is the only one that knows mm-hmm. the answer to that, so we have to go through the three things that you just said. I mean, either I recommend we stop because it's time to try another one that gets at the experience, the thing that you're trying to convey. Mm-hmm. You will get at it better if you just start over. Or the student recognizes that what he was trying to say is said, even though he feels like he maybe should try to take it further or more. But it's there. And as long as the experience you're trying to convey is in it, it's done.
Yeah.
Even though there's maybe seven levels of done to any particular painting, the artist can decide early on, like Picasso could have stopped after his first few passes, and it would have been there. But he kept going because that's his way of doing it. He just paints like that. Mm-hmm. And it's an example of how Picasso was a process. Mm-hmm. And these artifacts, these sparks of the process come flying this way and that.
Yeah.
And then then they become commodities in the marketplace, all this stuff. But this is behind him. He's a process moving forward, doing what he does. And he either he could paint out 10 finished pieces before he stops and has one that may or may not be better than what was before, but it is a stopping. So it's just the point at which he stopped.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I find more and more in my own work that I stop when I've gone far enough to see what I really should do next. It's sort of like I'm developing something that I began, and that development reaches a stage where it reveals to me the next thing to do, which usually is a whole nother piece. It's not that piece anymore. So it's sort of like, whoop, this one is not relevant. I'm stopping it just because it stopped. Whatever that flow was, it stopped. It's kind of on its own. And continuing it would be, a formality. It doesn't have anything to do with the artistic process that I'm engaged in.
Which is a difficult thing sometimes, because if you've invested a certain amount of time in something, you feel like, if this isn't working and I stop, then I've wasted all this time up to now. Like for me, if I start reading a book and then I'm halfway through it and I realize I'm really not enjoying this book, I used to feel obligated to finish it somehow. And I just, that's ridiculous. There's like zillions of books I want to read. Why do I have to finish reading this one?
Yeah.
And it's the same thing with my works of art. And I felt bad because I had volumes of half finished works of art. But the truth was, the energy just dwindled. And this thing that Thomas Moritz said about spend more time with beginnings, the kind of going back again to the beginning of the same concept actually did eventually lead to a much more wonderful work in the end. Matisse used to do, you know, these like wonderful line drawings he did of a plant or a face or something. He would often do hundreds of them of the same face or the same tree with leaves on it. And then out of all those hundreds, he would pick out the ones that said what he wanted to say. And so you go to a museum and you see like three simple line drawings of faces lined up together and you just go, oh my God, how did he do this? One show I saw had a photograph of the woman that he had drawn, and the drawing was just like hardly any lines at all, and it absolutely captivated 100% who she was.
Yeah.
But it was because he did hundreds of them, and then mm-hmm.
but it's all about, he's got a feeling mm-hmm. and he's trying to get at this feeling,
yeah.
and he keeps going again and again and again trying to get at it, and they all have it to some extent,
yeah.
but maybe there's one or two that seem to get it more, and that's what it's all about.
Yeah.
If his intention was to sit in front of a blank canvas, what am I going to paint? I'm going to paint a painting. And then he drew some lines to make a face. Oh, good, I've got a painting. I mean, that's this thing.
Yeah.
And so it's about a cognition. You've got a cognition that you want to get out. And so beginnings is very important, because it's in the beginning that you have the clearest kind of feeling, whether it's clearly visualized in your head or just a feeling. It's in the beginning that you've got it.
Mm-hmm.
And then any commentary after that is about that. And so if you just let the process sort of drag, sometimes a painting, because of the difficulties of the materials and all, drags you somewhere. And then you have to hit yourself on the head and say, no, wait, I've got to go back to the beginning where it all started, and compare that idea with what I've got here.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're honest, that's why truthfulness in the commentary on the experience is the whole thing.
Mm.
If you're honest, you'll say, it's not quite there, I need to go back and start again, or I need to go paint out or something. What people tend to do is they rationalize, oh, it's not bad, somebody wants to buy it, people are giving me praise for it.
Mm-hmm.
So, sure, I'll make some more of them, because people, and the thing is, the whole precious art process has gotten lost here,
mm-hmm.
which has to do with beginning. So here we are.
Yeah, and I like your word commentary, because, I mean, that kind of made me see what happened when I took Thomas More's advice about spend time with beginnings, that each next stage in a work is a commentary on what you just did, and then that new stage that you just added is a new beginning that becomes a catalyst for the next stage of commentary, and so the whole thing flows, and you kind of reevaluate at every moment, and then the energy, the spark, stays alive instead of always going back to some preconceived full-scale picture that you had at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what it's all about, keeping that spark alive,
yeah.
one way or another. I mean, that's what, you know, that's in the renewal of the cycles and the new year that we're talking about. I think that the whole idea is that with each new year, instead of this sort of like dying, decaying, sort of like packaged and bounded thing that is, we think of like as the old year, it's time to renew and to break out and to let life itself emerge again.
And reflection has something to do with it too. It's like at the end of a year, when New Year's is going, we're making our New Year's resolutions, we kind of look back and evaluate the previous year, at least that's what I do, and then make my New Year's resolutions. And I think that's a valuable thing for an artist to do too. It's like spend some time reflecting on where you've been and where do you want to go from there. Not to set like absolutely etched in stone goals, but more of a direction of growth, or, you know, what you're doing as an explorer in the world of creativity.
Yeah, you have to tie what you're doing back to yourself, because after a while, what you're doing often turns into something you do. And, you know, people ask me, well, you know, what do? And I immediately draw a blank. Mm-hmm. I think, well, I live. Yeah. And that's it. You know, and when I was, you know, running the information systems for a multinational aerospace company, people said, what do? I didn't think, oh, I sit behind a desk all day long and I worry about whether the computers are working and whether senior management has finally understood that the flow of information through a company is what a business really is. That's not what I do. What I do is I go in there and I try and understand myself and my relationship to my world, and I happen to be doing it, you know, in this particular context, and yes, there's a desk and I'm behind it a lot, but that isn't what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as a composer, that's not what I'm doing either. I'm not being a composer. I'm just hearing something coming out of the instrument and then responding to that and marveling that it's even possible for that to be happening, and discovering that I can make it even more marvelous if I, you know, take the right direction.
Those are two good words to end on, I think. Marveling and discovering. That's kind of the key to the spark, I think.
Listening to Icon Art Radio, a production of Iowa Contemporary Art, Fairfield.